How many of you are like me and you have some of your grandchildren's pictures or maybe your children? Does everybody here have a photograph in your purse somewhere? You know, my friend Henrietta gave me this little photograph envelope as a gentle hint, I think, that maybe we should just take one or two photographs with us. But they're in everyone's home. Usually there is an album, or in this case, I've borrowed these from June Watts, and she has several albums. And we see, as we journey through, we'll see a lot of milestones. We see the parents of that home as they were children, and maybe as they were courting. And then there'll be wedding pictures. My favorite in this particular album is this. I call this the polyester picture. Remember those days of polyester? But have you ever thought how many things you learn about a family by looking through a photograph album? And you can even learn things about the times. They're just as this, you say, I said, is this the 80s or what? This is the 80s. We know the time. And sometimes we learn about the family itself. We learn about family members. There might be a little tattoo on someone's cheek. There's a song out about tattoos. It says a tattoo is a permanent reminder of a temporary feeling. So you see a lot of those temporary things in a family album. But you know, we have a book that is not temporary, and it's not pictures, because in a picture album, usually we find people with, well, what do you say before you make a picture? Smile! And so they're smiling faces. And we don't see a lot of photographs of people when they've been told it looks like it's cancer, or the drug test is positive, or she has a 50% hearing loss. That's your child. Or there's been an accident. Or the doctor comes out and says, I'm sorry to tell you, it's over. They have passed. We don't have photographs like that in our picture albums, do we? And we don't have a photograph of a wife's face when her husband says, I just don't love you anymore. Those things are not in our photograph albums. But we have a book, this permanent book, right here. And this is a book that tells it like it is. In this book, there are good times and there are bad times. And we see our characters. We call them Bible stories, but you know, the words that we read in this book, they really happened. What about Abraham when God said to him, I'm going to bless you, and look up at the stars, Abraham. That's how many children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren that you will have. He really lived. Abraham and Moses, good and bad. He was meek and weak, wasn't he? So we learn about people who actually breathed just like we do. They get up in the morning and go, these people were real. You know, I'm privileged now. I live right across from the office, and I can step out my back door and go right down the drive, and I'm over to the office. And a lot of times I get up early. I'm in there at 5:30 or 6 o'clock. And I was walking across this past week. I was walking across to the office, and I looked up, and the stars were beautiful. I mean, why don't we look up more often? And I thought then, these are the same stars that Hosea looked into the sky and saw. This is the same earth that the people tilled in these times that we're going to study about today. So as we think about memories and my particular topic today, I just don't know if these little tender ears need to hear all these words that are in the book of Hosea, but we're going to say these words anyway, because we do need to be reminded. Now, we know that David was a man after God's own heart, and yet we saw good and bad pictures of him in the Bible, happenings. And throughout the Old Testament period, who were the people that God spoke directly to? You can talk in this class. Who were the people that God spoke directly to? They were the teachers of the time. The prophets. So in the time of David, who was the prophet that came to him and said, the man is you? Nathan. So we had Nathan the prophet, and then there was a big contest on Mount Carmel. And who was the prophet that showed up? Elijah. He showed up, the prophets of Baal, so much that they all went running. And in fact, it was a massacre. So these people were very important, the prophets of God. But today we're going to open God's book. You go ahead and be turning there because I'm going to be talking to you while you do this. Hosea chapter 10. This will be our text. Hosea chapter 10. If you're just coming into the lectureship, I'll give you just a little background because we have had great background so far about the book of Hosea. Hosea was most probably a Samaritan, and his mission was to bring the Israelites back to God. And listen, it was a big mission because they were so far gone. They were very blessed materially, and they were into materialism. And they were so sorry that instead of being thankful to God for their many blessings, they went and offered sacrifices to the false gods, to Baal and Ashtoreth, these gods that were just sticks and stones. That's how far gone they were. They had so forgotten God. Now Hosea prophesied to the kings in the area of 1 Kings, let's see. We heard this yesterday. 1 Kings chapter 14 through 17 and 2 Chronicles 26 through 29. And God spoke directly to him, to the prophet Hosea, and this was his message. Now, you should just remember one or two things in this lesson, and this is one you should remember. This is what he told Hosea. Go and get you a wife of immorality. The King James says whoredom. Go get you a wife of whoredom. And we think, my, what would I do? What would I do if my son went over into a foreign land and got a woman of ill repute? This is a girlfriend who has no morals. She's never been taught one man for one woman for life. But that's what Hosea was told to do. And what did he do? The Bible says in Hosea chapter 1, so he went. Those three words mean a lot, don't they? So we learn a lot about Hosea just in the first chapter of the book, that he was very obedient and he loved God and wanted to serve God. And it says, so he went and took Gomer. Gomer was his girlfriend. Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear Gomer, I think of, all right then, Andy. But this was, when I try to picture, now, what would Gomer look like? Do you think she was a real looker? She was something that starts with H that rhymes with looker. or she had that background. We really don't know. The Bible does not tell us what she looked like. Really doesn't tell us anything except about her spirit, which was a black picture. But he took Gomer. Okay, let's read Hosea 10. You're all there. We're going to read verse 1. This tells about the condition of the people of God at this time, the children of Israel. Israel is an empty vine. He bringeth forth fruit unto himself. According to the multitude of his fruit, he hath increased the altars. According to the goodness of his land, they have made goodly images. Now just stop right there and you find out what can you know about the children of Israel just from this first verse. Well, they're selfish because they brought forth fruit where? Unto himself, unto Israel himself. They brought fruit for themselves. They were selfish, and they were idolaters because with what they had, then they offered it up to the false gods. So they were serving not the true God, but they were serving false gods. So we know that about them. And also, we know from the next verse, let's just read this, their heart is divided. Now shall they be found faulty. He shall break down their altars. He shall spoil their images. So we know that really, even though they were fruitful with material goods, spiritually they were barren. And I just challenge you to read the book. This is not a long book. Just read it. Just read it for pure reading pleasure, because it's really better than Days of Our Lives. And we see here their heart is divided and they're faulty. And so God is going to break down these altars and he's going to spoil. In other words, the day is coming. We read this in chapter 9. It is coming. God's day of reckoning is on the way. And Hosea's job is to warn these people, get ready. You know, you've got to turn this around. And in the manuscript that I submitted for the book, which you really must get because I cannot cover all this material in this short time, but I kind of built the theme around country songs. And the first country song is, "Your Cheating Heart." And that's exactly what we read about here in verse 2, because their hearts were divided. And for your heart to be divided, that means it is pulled. And there has to be an allegiance on one side for you to be pulled away, for your heart to split. So in order, I guess what I'm saying is, in order to cheat on somebody, you must have first formed an allegiance with them. And the Israelites certainly did have an allegiance with God, didn't they? What all had he done for them? Manna in the wilderness, led them by a pillar of fire at night, a pillar of cloud in the daytime. He made it so their shoes wouldn't wear out, their clothes didn't get old. So, I mean, that's just the beginning. If you just start in Genesis and go through, you just see how he's blessed them and blessed them and blessed them. There was an allegiance, but now they had a cheating heart. And just as, was it Hank Williams saying that? Just as he sang, "Your cheating heart will tell on you." We know that Israel did belong to God, but she sold out to adultery. In Hosea 4:8, we read, now listen to this. They set their heart on iniquity. What is iniquity? Sin. And that's where their focus was on sin. It reminds you about the day of Noah, doesn't it? When the thoughts of their hearts were evil continually. Okay, they set their heart on their iniquity. And then in verse 11 of chapter 4, whoredom and wine take away the heart. Now, if you want to make a count of the word harlotry or whoredom or adulterer, how many times that happens in the book of Hosea, you just go right ahead. I can just tell you, in southern terms, it was a lot. A lot of times these words were mentioned. And you know what, when I read that little verse there, if you just want to underline it in your Bible, Hosea 4:11, it says new wine and old wine. New wine and wine take away the heart, and also whoredom. Because what a lot of people don't realize is that addictions take away the heart. It's the first sign of a dividing. When we become so enthralled with another thing, wine for one, and you will, if you counsel with or you know people that have a problem with alcohol, and let's just don't be proud, because statistics say it's in almost every family somewhere. I mean, you will know there will be a grandparent or an uncle, or there will be somebody that has this problem. And their whole life gets built around that thing. Their whole day at work beginning is like, well, when I get home, I'll have this drink, or when I finish work, I'll go out with my friends, and I'll have... It is an addiction. Well, so is whoredom. So is harlotry. It's a sexual addiction. There is a high. These things take our hearts away. And as we're going to find out later, the beginning, it does not happen instantly. It's going to be a gradual thing. Okay, so now that we know some of these things, Let's look at the memory book. Let's look at Hosea's and Gomer's photo album. You know, it's hard to imagine that there would be pictures of them, and there aren't, so we just have to imagine them. And here they are. Here's their courtship. And they are so in love. Gomer is excited that she is finally going to get married, and she's marrying a preacher. And Hosea is excited because he's doing exactly what God told him to do. He is getting a wife that God told him. And you know, he loves her. He pledged his love to her. And then there was a wedding of some type. They got married, Hosea and Gomer. Then the children came. The first child's name was Jezreel. And Jezreel was a baby boy. And his name meant scattered. All of Hosea's and Gomer's children were significant because they were lessons to the people and the children of Israel of their behavior. So Jezreel, which also means valley of decision, was the first child. And this name meant scattered. In other words, they were far from God, the children of Israel. It was symbolic. But you know, these little children lived. They were in that household, little innocent children that were symbolic of what was going on in the nation. And next was a little girl. And God told Hosea to call her name Loruhamah. And little Loruhamah, her name meant no mercy. That meant God was fed up. He was tired of this. And the third little boy, his name was Lo-Ami. And this is the saddest name to me because what it actually means is not my people. Just think if your mother or your father disowned you and they would look at you and say, you're not mine anymore. You're not my people. This is the way God felt about his people. Isn't this a sad, sad family album? It was supposed to be a sad family album. It was because of a cheating heart. Really, the Israelites deserved this. And you'd say, why would God tell Hosea to go and get this woman that he knew had a terrible background? Why would he do that? Well, he would do that to get the attention of his people. Now, I'm from the country. You already know I grew up as a dairy farmer. But y'all all know the story about that farmer that he had a big two before, and he was just whamming his mule, just hitting that mule in the head. And his neighbor came by and said, what are you doing? He said, I'm trying to get this mule to know how to plow. He said, why are you hitting this mule in the head with a two before? He said, first I have to get its attention. This is what God was doing. This is what God was doing. He was getting the people's attention because can you imagine Maxie and Fran living right here in the Fort Worth area, and here they have all these little children with these bad names. And not only that, Fran is painting up her lips and rolling and curling her tinted hair. I mean, this is where these people live. These women, you just think about all the Israelites. This got out. This was their spiritual leader. He was supposed to be exhorting the kings. And here he is living with this woman that she is Ruby, don't take your love to town. And in modern times, we would hear Hosea say, Gomer, don't take your love to town. But, you know, he loved her. And we don't know how he found her, and we don't know if she really loved him, but we do know, this is in Hosea 3, chapter 1, that God told him, go again and love a woman who is loved by her husband. So we do know for a fact that he did love her. And it's easy to picture Israel as a spoiled wife. isn't it? I mean, we're talking symbolically. It's easy to picture that Israel was a spoiled wife, and she greedily snatched what God gave her and never gave any sanction that this was from God. But when we read the book of Hosea, if you just take this book and read it, you will see it will make you weep how God felt. He was so sad. His grief is transparent because his chosen people had played the harlot. And in a room this size, there's bound to be somebody that's had that betrayal happen to them. And when we think that we have been betrayed and the person we love the most has gone and had the most intimate relationship with somebody that did not belong to them, somebody embraced a divided heart, that's the way God felt. So the Israelites in general had a theme. And their theme was, sin is fun and I want some. That is what their lives were about. And anything goes, it was a lot, as the gentleman pointed out yesterday, it was a lot like our culture today. It was a sign of the time. In fact, in chapter 9, you know, sometimes I think we are just too nice. We are just too nice. We want to be kind and we want to have the Spirit of Christ. But you know, when it came to sin, Jesus Christ was not too nice. And even in the book of Hosea in chapter 9, he prayed that God would give these women miscarrying wombs and dry breast. In other words, he is wanting his race to end. This is so bad. He prayed basically for the extinction of his people. Now that's really strong, but how often do we pray that the forces of evil will be defeated? Now I want us to continue to pray, you know, for our leaders to be what they need to be. But the forces of evil are there, and we are in a world that is reign. The reign here is by the prince of darkness, or the devil. And we need to pray that this be defeated. We do not need to apologize for it. And we need to take up arms and march against people. I mean, literally, if we need to, march, but send out letters and send out emails for when we see evil. Babies being killed in the womb. You know, we all know a lot of the things that were happening with Sodom and Gomorrah, and it comes down to, I have this book right here that every parent needs to read, and grandparent, and we try to make it user-friendly, Christianity or Humanism. This is where we're living today. We're living in a humanistic world. It's me, 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 me. And you take a look, I see it down at the grandchild's level and the children's level. Me, me, me. It's the same way it was back then. They had no thought for God. And we are to the point where we almost apologize that we believe in God. And the only wrong thing that we can do is to make a stand and say, you're wrong. You know, that is just not right. And I believe the Bible is true. And yes, I believe these people walked and talked. And it's time for us to put these people on the defensive instead of wondering what we believe and wondering if it really is true and how was the world way back then. You know what? We don't know. None of us were there. And some of the artifacts that were found, you know, then they later on find out it didn't really mean that. You know, so it says we came from a monkey and here's the proof, here's a bone or something. And then you get 100 years down the road and they say, no, it wasn't that. It was something else. So we need to take this personally. We need to take the signs of the times personally and wake up and take action. If we step back into the time of Hosea and see that this was the preacher's family and that God was not the problem and Hosea was not the problem, we tend to put the blame all over on Gomer, his wife, because Gomer certainly knew what's that song about? You can't hide your lying eyes. And let's see, I had one. They knew how to open doors with just a smile, and they walked right into adultery and whoredom without counting the cost. That's in Hosea chapter 7. Now we're getting down to the heart of the matter, because that verse says they considered not in their hearts. They considered not in their hearts. This, to me, it's when we go to bed at night, you know, and it's just you and the darkness, and God is there. You know God is there. And that's your heart. And even in the most still and quiet moments, these Israelites couldn't even thank God. They couldn't even consider what they were doing. And the last thing that's heartbreaking in that, in fact, it's in verse 14, says, "And they have not cried unto me with their heart." And we need to get the picture. God wants our hearts, and He wants our whole hearts. He does not want a little piece of my heart. Take it, take a little bitty piece of my heart. You know, you've heard that song. He doesn't want a little bitty piece of my heart. He wants my whole heart. And we get this picture definitely from the book of Hosea. If we search through the Bible, just for the, if you just do a search for hearts, just get in your concordance and look, you will find so many references to the heart. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 6, and they're numerous. Matthew 22, 37 through 38, that we love God with all our heart, all our soul, and all our mind, and that is the first and great commandment. He wants our heart. And He wants all my heart. And in the book, I listed all of the Ten Commandments. Every one of the Ten Commandments, you think about when the transgression starts, it has to do with a divided heart. Every time. Jesus' way is the best way. And He went right to the heart of the commandments, because what did He say? You've heard it said, or she had that background. We really don't know. The Bible does not tell us what she looked like. Really doesn't tell us anything except about her spirit, which was a black picture. But He took Gomer. Okay, let's read Hosea 10. You're all there. We're going to read verse 1. This tells about the condition of the people of God at this time, the children of Israel. Israel is an empty vine. He bringeth forth fruit unto himself. According to the multitude of his fruit, he hath increased the altars. According to the goodness of his land, they have made goodly images. Now just stop right there and you find out what can you know about the children of Israel just from this first verse. Well, they're selfish, because they brought forth fruit where? Unto himself, unto Israel himself. They brought fruit for themselves. They were selfish, and they were idolaters, because with what they had, then they offered it up to the false gods. So they were serving not the true God, but they were serving false gods. So we know that about them. And also, we know from the next verse, let's just read this, their heart is divided. Now shall they be found faulty. He shall break down their altars. He shall spoil their images. So we know that really, even though they were fruitful with material goods, spiritually they were barren. And I just challenge you to read the book. This is not a long book. Just read it. Just read it for pure reading pleasure, because it's really better than Days of Our Lives. And we see here their heart is divided and they're faulty. And so God is going to break down these altars, and He's going to spoil. In other words, the day is coming. We read this in chapter 9. It is coming. God's day of reckoning is on the way. And Hosea's job is to warn these people, get ready. You know, you've got to turn this around. And in the manuscript that I submitted for the book, which you really must get, because I cannot cover all this material in this short time, but I kind of built the theme around country songs. And the first country song is, "Your Cheating Heart." And that's exactly what we read about here in verse 2. Because their hearts were divided. And for your heart to be divided, that means it is pulled. And there has to be an allegiance on one side for you to be pulled away, for your heart to split. So, I guess what I'm saying is, in order to cheat on somebody, You must have first formed an allegiance with them. And the Israelites certainly did have an allegiance with God, didn't they? What all had He done for them? Manna in the wilderness, led them by a pillar of fire at night, a pillar of cloud in the daytime. He made it so their shoes wouldn't wear out, their clothes didn't get old. So, I mean, that's just the beginning. If you just start in Genesis and go through, you just see how He's blessed them and blessed them and blessed them. There was an allegiance, but now they had a cheating heart. And just as, was it Hank Williams saying that? Just as he sang, your cheating heart will tell on you. We know that Israel did belong to God, but she sold out to adultery. In Hosea 4:8, we read, now listen to this. They set their heart on iniquity. What is iniquity? Sin. And that's where their focus was on sin. It reminds you about the day of Noah, doesn't it? When the thoughts of their hearts were evil continually. Okay, they set their heart on their iniquity. And then in verse 11 of chapter 4, whoredom and wine take away the heart. Now, if you want to make a count of the word harlotry or whoredom or adulterer, how many times that happens in the book of Hosea, you just go right ahead. I can just tell you, in southern terms, it was a lot. A lot of times these words were mentioned. And, you know, what? When I read that little verse there, if you just want to underline it in your Bible, Hosea 4:11, it says new wine and old wine. New wine and wine take away the heart. And also whoredom. Because what a lot of people don't realize is that addictions take away the heart. It's the first sign of a dividing. When we become so enthralled with another thing, wine for one, and you will, if you counsel with or you know people that have a problem with alcohol, and let's just don't be proud, because statistics say it's in almost every family somewhere. I mean, you will know there will be a grandparent or an uncle, or there will be somebody that has this problem. And their whole life gets built around that thing. Their whole day at work beginning is like, well, when I get home, I'll have this drink, or when I finish work, I'll go out with my friends, and I'll have... It is an addiction. Well, so is whoredom. So is harlotry. It's a sexual addiction. There is a high. These things take our hearts away. And as we're going to find out later, the beginning, it does not happen instantly. It's going to be a gradual thing. Okay, so now that we know some of these things, let's look at the memory book. Let's look at Hosea's and Gomer's photo album. You know, it's hard to imagine that there would be pictures of them, and there aren't, so we just have to imagine them. And here they are. Here's their courtship. And they are so in love. Gomer is excited that she is finally going to get married, and she's marrying a preacher. And Hosea is excited because he's doing exactly what God told him to do. He is getting a wife that God told him. And you know, he loves her. He pledged his love to her. And then there was a wedding of some type. They got married, Hosea and Gomer. Then the children came. The first child's name was Jezreel. And Jezreel was a baby boy. And his name meant scattered. All of Hosea's and Gomer's children were significant because they were lessons to the people and the children of Israel of their behavior. So Jezreel, which also means valley of decision, was the first child. And this name meant scattered. In other words, they were far from God. The children of Israel. It was symbolic. But you know, these little children lived. They were in that household, little innocent children that were symbolic of what was going on in the nation. And next was a little girl. And God told Hosea to call her name Loruhamah. And little Loruhamah, her name meant no mercy. That meant God was fed up. He was tired of this. And the third little boy, his name was Lo-Ami. And this is the saddest name to me, because what it actually means is not my people. Just think, if your mother or your father disowned you, and they would look at you and say, you're not mine anymore, you're not my people. This is the way God felt about his people. Isn't this a sad, sad family album? It was supposed to be a sad family album. It was because of a cheating heart. Really, the Israelites deserved this. And you'd say, why would God tell Hosea to go and get this woman that he knew had a terrible background? Why would he do that? Well, he would do that to get the attention of his people. Now, I'm from the country. You already know I grew up as a dairy farmer. But y'all all know the story about that farmer that he had a big two before, and he was just whamming his mule, just hitting that mule in the head. And his neighbor came by and said, what are you doing? He said, I'm trying to get this mule to know how to plow. He said, why are you hitting this mule in the head with a two before? He said, first I have to get its attention. This is what God was doing. This is what God was doing. He was getting the people's attention, because can you imagine Maxie and Fran living right here in the Fort Worth area, and here they have all these little children with these bad names. And not only that, Fran is painting up her lips and rolling and curling her tinted hair. I mean, this is where these people live. These women, you just think about all the Israelites. This got out. This was their spiritual leader. He was supposed to be exhorting the kings. And here he is living with this woman that she is Ruby, don't take your love to town. And in modern times, we would hear Hosea say, Gomer, don't take your love to town. But, you know, he loved her. And we don't know how he found her, and we don't know if she really loved him, but we do know, this is in Hosea 3, chapter 1, that God told him, go again and love a woman who is loved by her husband. So we do know for a fact that he did love her. And it's easy to picture Israel as a spoiled wife, isn't it? I mean, we're talking symbolically. It's easy to picture that Israel was a spoiled wife, and she greedily snatched what God gave her and never gave any sanction that this was from God. But when we read the book of Hosea, if you just take this book and read it, you will see it will make you weep how God felt. He was so sad. His grief is transparent because his chosen people had played the harlot. And in a room this size, there's bound to be somebody that's had that betrayal happen to them. And when we think that we have been betrayed and the person we love the most has gone and had the most intimate relationship with somebody that did not belong to them, somebody embraced a divided heart, that's the way God felt. So the Israelites in general had a theme. And their theme was, sin is fun and I want some. That is what their lives were about. And anything goes. It was a lot, as the gentleman pointed out yesterday, it was a lot like our culture today. It was a sign of the time. In fact, in chapter 9, you know, sometimes I think we are just too nice. We are just too nice. We want to be kind and we want to have the Spirit of Christ. But you know, when it came to sin, Jesus Christ was not too nice. And even in the book of Hosea in chapter 9, he prayed that God would give these women miscarrying wombs and dry breasts. In other words, he is wanting his race to end. This is so bad. He prayed basically for the extinction of his people. Now that's really strong, but how often do we pray that the forces of evil will be defeated? Now I want us to continue to pray, you know, for our leaders to be what they need to be. But the forces of evil are there, and we are in a world that is reign. The reign here is by the prince of darkness or the devil. And we need to pray that this be defeated. We do not need to apologize for it. And we need to take up arms and march against people. I mean, literally, if we need to, march, but send out letters and send out emails for when we see evil. Babies being killed in the womb. You know, we all know a lot of the things that were happening with Sodom and Gomorrah, and it comes down to, I have this book right here that every parent needs to read, and grandparent, and we try to make it user-friendly, Christianity or Humanism. This is where we're living today. We're living in a humanistic world. It's me, 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 me. And you take a look, I see it down at the grandchild's level and the children's level. Me, me, me. It's the same way it was back then. They had no thought for God. And we are to the point where we almost apologize that we believe in God. And the only wrong thing that we can do is to make a stand and say, you're wrong. You know, that is just not right. And I believe the Bible is true. And yes, I believe these people walked and talked. And it's time for us to put these people on the defensive instead of wondering what we believe and wondering if it really is true and how was the world way back then. You know what? We don't know. None of us were there. And some of the artifacts that were found, you know, then they later on find out it didn't really mean that. You know, so it says we came from a monkey and here's the proof, here's a bone or something. And then you get 100 years down the road and they say, no, it wasn't that. It was something else. So we need to take this personally. We need to take the signs of the times personally and wake up and take action.